general meeting is in person and teleconference. The time is 6:12, 9:15, 2020. We're going to stand and we're going to do the pledge. Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Now we'll have a moment of silence for our service personnel and first responders. Thank you. Roll call.
Director Sanderson.
Here.
Director Diana Morris.
Here.
Director Sarah Borgel.
Here.
Director Maxine Israel.
Here.
Director Robert Link.
Here. Okay.
Where'd
I go? This is all the stuff I got to sign. This is not my board time.
Yeah.
This is my old one. Can you look at mine over there? Give me a moment, please. First one is I need approval of the minutes of the Finance and Audit Committee and the general meeting on for the last month's meeting.
I move that we approve the Finance and Audit and regular board meeting for last month.
I second that.
You second
that? Diana. Morris.
Director Sanderson.
Aye.
Director Morris.
Aye.
Director Wargo.
Aye.
Director Israel.
Aye.
And Director Link.
Aye. No warrants, no awards of contracts. Updates, the San Gregorio Pass Regional Water Alliance update. Any information?
Yes. We pretty much just talked about the what to expect from rain from the Apple fire. It's going to be a lot of mudslides and stuff like that. They just said to let the public know that it could happen, but it's mainly going to be in Banning and Cherry Valley. And our next water meeting, our next alliance meeting is October 28th at 5 p.m. And then the one after that is January 27th at 5 p.m.
Okay.
And that's it.
Calvin on this rate study for the past few months. We did a prior rate study back in 2017, so we're updating it now. So my name is Kim. I'm the project manager, Kim Baylor from MBS, and I have Jordan Taylor, who is my consultant, who has worked with me on the project, and she's here to help me tonight. So we're going to go over an overview of the rate study. There are three major components to any rate study. The first one is the financial plan. This is where we look at all the district's revenues, expenditures, cash reserves, and determine how much revenue needs to be collected and what projected rate increases need to be in order to fully fund the district. The second step is the cost of service analysis, and this is where we look at how to allocate costs to each customer class. And then our rate design is how we actually structure the fixed and variable charges that make it to customer bills. So we'll go over each component of the rate study here tonight. The first one is the financial plan. So when we look at funding priorities, the first priority is to fund your operating and maintenance costs, your regular annual O&M expenditures to run the utility, staff time, supplies, services, everything that's needed to run the water operation. The second priority is funding your debt service, and you have two current outstanding loans that we're paying down every year. And then we have our capital improvement program. So we have a five-year schedule of capital improvements that the district needs to accomplish, and we'll show you what those projects are tonight. And then the second, or the last funding priority is looking at your reserve funds and how much cash the district has on hand and how much should be on hand going forward. So this chart here is a graphical representation of what your O&M expenditures are every year. So they're just under $1.4 million right now and increasing to just a hair over $1.4 million at the end of the five-year rate period. So each bar represents what O&M expenditures are in each of 6 years up here. So the first bar represents last fiscal year, 2019-20, and then this chart goes out to fiscal year 24-25. So the five-year rate period is from this current fiscal year, 2020-21, and ends in 2024-25. The red bar at the top, or the red line at the top of the chart, represents where your rate revenue is. Every year, if there was no change, if there was no change to rates, you'd be able to fund your O&M costs for the next 5 years. But we also have debt service, so you have approximately $130,000 in debt service payments you're making on an annual basis. You have a DWR loan that goes through fiscal year 26-27, just under $49,000 a year. And then we have a loan from Zion First National Bank that goes through fiscal year 22-23. And that payment is just under $89,000 a year. So if we add the debt service payments to the graph here, you can see the debt service payments represented by the gold bar. So we can also fund with your existing rate revenue your debt service payments every year for the next 5 years, which is also good. The district has a five-year capital improvement program, and it showed up here on slide 9. So you have a couple of major projects that need to be done this year and next year. The larger ones are your tank number 1 rehab, connection and transfer box. You also have a purchase of a service utility truck and Bonita Vault rehab, and then a couple of other smaller projects. Main Street property, meter replacement program, relocating a fire hydrant, things like that. So you have just under $1 million and under $900,000 in capital project costs that need to be funded over the next 5 years. So when we look at adding the annual CIP capital improvement program costs in this chart, the district does not have sufficient revenue to cover the expenditures on an annual basis. So since we're not bringing in rate revenue those years, we're going to dip into reserves to pay for those projects. So looking at your reserve fund targets, and this has been these targets have been consistent at the district for over 10 years now or so. The district has had a total reserve target of about $1 million. So what you can fund with $1 million is an operating reserve that is equal to 180 days of O&M expenditures and a capital rehab and replacement reserve that is 6% of net assets. And these targets are bare minimum for the industry. And so this chart here shows actual cash balances. So the bars represent cash balances each year in the five-year rate period. The blue bars represent unrestricted cash. So this is your capital reserve and your O&M reserve. The green bar represents a small amount that you're holding in a debt reserve for your outstanding loans. And so the minimum target balance is just over $1 million at the end of the five-year period, you can see. The ideal target balance would be better to hold $2 million. So at the end of 2024-25, it looks like you'll be a little over $1.5 million in reserves. And so you're halfway in between meeting that $2 million target at the end of the five-year period, okay? And so this chart here shows a complete picture of your financial plan. So we have the annual expenditures, your annual revenue from rates under existing with no increase, and then we have the dotted black line represents where revenue would be under adjusted rates. So what we're proposing here is a 3% increase to rate revenue each year. So each customer will be impacted a little bit differently, but overall we're trying to collect 3% more revenue each year for the five-year rate period. So very minimal, essentially equal to just general cost inflation. So the cost of service analysis, this is where we looked at allocating your cost to your fixed and variable charges. And so we have, in your fixed charges, we have several different components to the rates. We have capacity costs, customer costs, and fire protection costs. So capacity costs are really general maintaining the system, having facilities. Customer costs are really for providing service to customers, customer service, billing, reading meters, and then your fire protection. This is for your fire protection meters. And then we have your variable rates, and that's your, you know, commodity costs related to providing water service to your customers. And so here is the breakdown of the each component of your charges. So, or your costs. So your capacity costs are about 73% of your overall cost portfolio. Customer costs are about 5% of your total cost. Fire protection is less than 0.5%. And then commodity is just over 21%. So your costs are primarily fixed, almost 80% fixed, which is fairly typical. Utilities costs are generally most fixed, but you have the structure rates with both fixed and variable components. Okay? So normally the rate structure doesn't exactly match the cost structure, which is a challenge in rate setting. The second component of the cost of service analysis is looking at your customer classes. So we have four major customer classes for the system. You have your single-family residential customers, and then you have some multifamily commercial, and you have a contract customer, which is the Desert Hills Premium Outlet. And then you have your construction customers. So they're temporary customers who are using water on a monthly basis. So the rate design, this is where we look at actually structuring the rate. And there's four major components to the rate design analysis. So the first one is looking at your customer classes of the four I mentioned on the previous slide. And then we look at allocating the cost in establishing variable charges. We have in the presentation tonight three alternatives for you to consider for adoption, different structures of fixed and variable charges, and then we have looking at how to structure fixed rates. We're not changing anything in your base rate structure. All customers will pay a fixed rate based on their meter size, which is based on hydraulic capacity of each meter connected to the system. And then we have your variable rate structure where single-family residential customers will keep a tiered rate and all other customers will pay a flat rate that is the same for every unit of water they use. So the three different rate alternatives that we're looking at here tonight, we've labeled them rate alternative A, B, and C. And so we're trying to collect a total of $1.4 million in this current fiscal year, and then each year that will go up by 3%. Rate alternative A is structured half and half, fixed and variable charges. So you collect half your revenue from your fixed meter charges and then half of your revenue from your variable charges for each size meter connect, or for each unit of water consumed. And that, when we show tables and charts, those numbers are represented in the green. And then we have rate alternative B. That's where we're trying to collect 40% of your revenue from fixed charges and 60% from variable charges. So it's a little less fixed, more variable. And then rate alternative C is all the way on the other end of the spectrum, where we're trying to collect 30% of your revenue from fixed charges and 70% from variable charges. Now, your current rate structure is more heavily fixed than any of these alternatives here. It's basically the opposite of C. It's almost 70% fixed, okay? So all the rate alternatives that you're going to see, your fixed the fixed meter charges actually go down, but the volumetric rates will go up because of that. And so just to review, with your variable rate, we're keeping the single-family residential tiers the same as they are now. Tier 1 would be up to 7 units of water, and then from 8 to 14 units of water, that's your Tier 2 rate, and then anything above 15 units, anyone using 15 units or more per month of water, they would pay the Tier 3 rate for that water. And then we have a uniform rate for both your commercial, non-residential, and construction customers, then your contract customers will pay a separate uniform rate for the first couple of years of the rate plan. And then they switch to the same rate that all other non-single-family residential customers pay. So if we look at the actual rate table here for rate alternative A, this is the 50% fixed, 50% variable rates. You can see how the rates will change over the five-year rate period. So most customers have a 5/8 inch meter, and they're currently paying $68.10 per month for that meter. For this rate plan, their fixed charge would go down to $41.40 per month with this first rate adjustment. That would we're projecting that it would be effective in January. So that would go till the next January, and then in January 2022, they would pay about $2 more per month, and then go up from there. At the end of the five-year rate period, that fixed meter charge would be $46.59, which is still over $20 less than they're paying right now. And then we have the fixed charges for your contract customer, and your construction meter, all three kitchens. And then we have your monthly fire service charges, so those are the private fire connections. Fixed charges for them, five-year rate plan. And then we have your volumetric rates down here at the bottom of the table. So the uniform rate for non-single-family residential, commercial, and your construction customers are currently paying $2.96 per unit of water. In this rate structure, because we're changing it and we're going to collect less revenue from your fixed charges, we have to pick up the difference in the volumetric charge. So they're going to be paying more per unit of water, so that per unit rate would go up to $5.05 and then increase 3% per year after that. Would increase 3% the next year, and then we, at the end of fiscal year 2021-22, your contract customer switches to the same rates as everybody else. So they would pay the single unit charge of $4.59 and then increase 3% the next 2 years.
But look at their fixed charge for the contract. So it goes from $2,300.
Yeah, I saw that. Right. So that's what a 10-inch meter should be paying at that point in time. So they would be, they would switch to that, that rate. Because right now you're limited by the constraints of the contract. And so that's good because your existing customers will benefit from that. Okay. Their volumetric rate will go down. And then on your tiered rate for single-family residential customers, currently the rates are $153 per unit for Tier 1, $335 for Tier 2, and $512 for Tier 3. And then those rates will increase to the $198 for Tier 1, $570 for Tier 2, and $10.02 per unit for Tier 3.
Whoa. I had a question on the uniform rate for the, after 2021-22, why does that uniform rate go down?
Because your contract customer will be on the same rate schedule, so they will be paying more. Their rate will go from $406 per unit up to $459, like everybody else.
So, but it's not going, so we can only increase them, it's going up what we can increase them, it's not going up of, because it looks like everybody else who's on the uniform rate would be getting a break as
right.
a volume metric.
Right, because you can start charging them the standard rate as everyone else, the same non-residential rate.
So we have more, the more fair and equitable treatment under the law.
Right. So there's more consumption that you can charge that higher rate to.
Yeah. Bigger pool to spread the cost to.
Yep. Okay. So if we look at the other two rate alternatives, you're going to see how they change. So you'll see the fixed charges are going to go down. And then the volumetric charges go up because we're changing the fixed and variable split. So now, in this option here, we're collecting only 40% of your revenue from fixed charges. So that's why they go down a little bit more. And that's just how volumetric charges go up. And then in the most extreme case here, alternative C, where it's 30% of your revenue that we're collecting from fixed charges, 70% from variable, the fixed charges go down even more, and then the volumetric charges go up. Joe,
questions here? I do. Sorry, I'm looking at the three different rates at the bottom lines here.
Yep.
So the proposed for 0 to 7, for those different tiers, those numbers are the same throughout all these different variable rates, even though we're increasing the variability.
Right. So what we're doing in Tier 1 is providing a baseline level of consumption for those customers that only use a little bit of water every month, so less 7 units or less. So they don't. We're not charging like extreme peaking costs because they're using such a low amount of water. All those costs get loaded onto the higher tiers. And so that the goal is water less expensive for the lower water users.
If you conserve, you save. If you use, you lose.
Yeah, you pay more, right.
I get what she's saying, is that anybody in the zero to seven, they're going to make out with the lower fix, but they're going to pay the same amount on the commodity charge.
Yeah.
Because that's the basic amount
of water use.
The rest is considered like excess.
I was assuming the more we would put on the variable, the higher that price would be, that stays the same through all three tiers for that first to seventh, for that Tier 1. That price stays exactly the same no matter how much we're putting in the fixed versus variable?
Right. Yeah.
Is that a function of how the math works, or is that a function of a decision that we
made? It was consistent with what we did last time where we wanted to keep like almost like a lifeline rate is what we discussed last time.
Okay. I get where you're coming from.
So that always means that if you're using under 700 cubic feet of water, then it does, if the fix is, then it's just going to be a less bill. But it really gets higher when you get down to that second and third tier.
Right.
Tiers line then.
What?
Tiers line then. Mm-hmm.
Stop having horses here in the desert.
So if we look at the actual bill impacts, I have two charts here. This one here shows what the monthly bills would be for your single-family residential customers at various levels of water use. So we have across the bottom of the screen here different consumption levels. So most of your customers are going to be below 20 or 30 units. So your average winter bill is someone using 6 units of water per month. Average annual bill is someone using 9 units of water per month. And then your average summer bill is someone that's using 13 units of water per month. So, you know, at all those levels, the bills for the low water users here are actually going to go down. It's your higher water users that would pay more, and they feel more of the impact of the rate adjustment here. And this is because we're, in all these alternatives, we're putting more emphasis on the variable charge. Okay? And we have, there's only a few customers that are actually using 100 units of water per month as far as single-family residential goes. I think we have about 40 bills a year. So
that's like over 3 years.
So over 3 years. Oh, okay.
Oh,
so it's less than I thought. Not a lot, but there's a few. Okay.
No, 100 cubic. Maybe not quite that much. I know I've had some good bills.
And then we show the same information here for your commercial customers. Different water usage amounts. They have different statistics than your single-family residential customers. They're using more water on average, which we would expect because commercial customers are different. Same effect. Your higher water users are going to feel more the burden of this rate adjustment because of how we're structuring fixed charge. That's the benefit here is, higher water users will pay more for water. It also creates more revenue instability for the utility because you're putting more emphasis on the variable charge.
But the majority of our customers are the single-family residential, right? That's where we get the majority of our money. I think way back, and it was 2015 when we did the rate study. It might have been into 16. I don't think it was 17. We did look at the fact that 78% of our costs were fixed. And so I think that's how we got on the discussion of putting such a high emphasis on the fixed cost. So the reason we did this rate study a little bit early was to reevaluate how much is on that fixed cost. Because we knew it would lower the bills for the majority of people. And it also gives people an incentive to conserve water that are using excess water, where there wasn't a incentive before. So, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to note something on this. This is the commercial water bill based on the 580. So, most of the commercials have more than a 580 meter. So they're charged, it's going to be more than that. Do we have any commercial on a 580?
Yeah. Yes, I do. Actually, most of your commercial are on 5/8 inch meters, but there's some that have larger meters. They go up to 4 inches.
Like the country store is probably on 5/8 meter,
yeah.
Whereas the Dollar General and the gas station are on larger meter than 5/8.
Well, if most of them are on, it still feels like to me that the commercial is getting a cheaper rate on water than the residential.
Well, they get an average. They get like an average rate because they pay. They don't get like the lower tier one rate that single family residential customers do. They get. They pay their uniform rate is in between the tier one and the tier two rate. So it's like kind of like an average of single family residential.
Okay. Why was there a tantrum?
That was
Because if you look at like the 100, right, if the commercial person used 100, they're paying $740. If the residential person used 100, they're paying $144,000.
Not $144,000.
$1,400. They're paying double. And that's the part that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, it's the part is, if you look at that tier, though, if somebody's using that much water, that's excess water for an individual, and that tier and up there, to get in that tier, it's over $10, which is really a lot. Some of them go up to $15, depending on which average that you're using. That's in that 14 one. That tier is over $15, which is three times as much as commercial.
Well, then, but if you go back to the next one, then why is the next one, the commercial, why is that on the tier level then? Why isn't that on uniform?
It is on a uniform rate. The commercial customers are paying uniform rates.
So all they're showing
here
is the alternative.
I'm just showing alternative versus
variable alternative.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the average seasonal statistics, average winter, average annual, average summer, just to show you a range of what consumption is. And do you want to talk? What are the percentages of water usage in the three tiers for single family?
Yes, I looked that up during the break. On average, for the smaller meters, so for the 5/8 and 3/4 inch meters, 19.6% of this is the number of bills that are put out each year. About 19.6% of the number of bills for single family fall into the consumption three. The larger meters have a larger amount, like the 1 inch meter. 60% of the bills have consumption in tier three. 1.5 and 82% consumption in tier three, and the 3 inch comes back down because there's only one single family. So right around 19% of single family bills fall into that.
They got three. I mean, they're always going to fall into the tier three almost. With that much water coming in, right?
You're saying the person with the 3-inch meter is always going to remain at that spot?
Well, no, the person with the 3-inch meter, I don't know how much water they need with the 3-inch meter, but they're probably always going to be in that tier 3.
And that's a very large meter for us.
So coming this year, they're going to be paying, you know,
3-inch meter, DeLuca? Does DeLuca have the 3-inch meter? That's kind of one of those questionable whether it's a business versus a...
Oh, okay, yeah.
Residential, because he got a business there, and it's up on Main Street.
Uh-huh.
But it's his residence, kind of like a mixed-use
right.
park.
Maybe, yeah, the solution might be to have 2 meters for that property.
That's a battle you don't really want to get into.
So overall,
what am I to? You ask them all.
I understand.
I would just say that overall, I'm not seeing 3% increases at any of my other districts. I'm seeing much higher, particularly with the loss of revenue due to COVID-19. Some of my clients that are dependent upon commercial revenue are hurting bad. Most of the increases I'm looking at right now with my other clients are around 8 to 10%. So we were pretty happy to be able to present you something with only a 3% increase, and I do want to remind you that we don't have to raise a 3% every year, but that's the ceiling. So you want to adopt something that at least you have a decent ceiling to work with. Ideally, that would get us closer in the 5 to 7 year range to more of a 2 million target, which is a little bit more ideal than the 1 million. We saw with the well repair that I think it came to $700,000 in total over 2 years. If you only had $1 million in the bank and you had $700,000 spent, that's significant. So I'd be more comfortable being near the ideal range, but to get there at only raising 3% is pretty fantastic, I think, just from my perspective, from the other things that I'm seeing. And for the majority of your customers, their bill is going to go down, regardless of what alternative you pick. The question is what alternative do you want as far as the percentage fixed and variable? And that's for you guys to decide.
Let me ask the public. I think more people jump up.
Is there anybody? Can you hear us on the phone line?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Any questions about what you may have heard or not heard?
Not yet. This is Director Israel. I have no questions. I have to keep mine on mute because of dogs.
Somebody else on there. So basically, do we need to do on this, or do you want us to...
So what you can do tonight, remember there's a 45-day process where we have to mail out notices. Those notices have to be printed with the rate structure that you pick, if you were to pick tonight. If you were to say, we like the 40% fixed, 60% variable, we would put those on the notices. Have BB&K help us draft that up. They would help us draft that notice up. We would send it out. And then probably at the December meeting, no, October, November. Then
probably no. Yeah, we sent it. If you agreed on an alternative tonight, it's September 15th. We could probably, sometime in November.
We could make it probably for the November meeting, worst case for the December meeting, where you have the hearing. And that's where you allow the public to come in. They've gotten the notice. They can give their input and so on. And at that time, you're not bound to that notice whatsoever. You can choose whatever you want on that day. You cannot choose to go higher, though, on that day.
3% increase.
That's correct.
But we could change the variable rate, depending on what.
No. Once you send the notice out, I don't think so.
No. You have to choose an alternative to the notice. And
you'd have to notice again the alternative.
Yeah, if you wanted to change
so
it.
So if we all decided from what the public says, if we choose the 70-30, 30-70. The public changes our mind, we'd have to resend out the notice and do it again?
That's correct.
Well, but to me that's too deep. Too deep.
Having so much water.
I am. I'm getting rid of everything and I'm getting ready to retire. And leave.
Are you getting out of California?
California? Oh, yeah.
Okay. So why don't we decide on something?
Well, I want to decide. I would like us to decide on something tonight so that we can get this process in because maybe we can give people a Christmas present.
So what do you guys like?
I like the 50-50.
I like the 70-30.
Well, you mean 37.
37.
I like
it. We're at 70-50 or 70-30.
We're at 70-30 now. I like the 30-70.
I like 30-70 too.
What about you, Maxine?
I like the 30-70. We've talked about lowering the rates for our customers, and that's what we should do.
Can you go back to the residential side? All of them initially lower. If people are doing surveys, it goes down, regardless of which one we choose.
It does. You do run the risk, though. Let's say you're a very high water user, and you take your horses and beat out of California, and that property is fallow. We just lost that revenue. So your revenue stability, like Kim has said, goes down, and most of our costs are fixed. So if we lose a pot farmer, or a horse guy, or an orchard.
I'm getting rid of my pigs.
We lose your pigs. I'm sorry, we need that revenue.
Yeah.
Because we're relying on it. Okay. That's the only risk you run, and that's the only caution I
would take. Like to bring a scenario to mind, and some of you may not be young enough to remember. Several years ago, a decade ago, when the last big drought was, per se, L.A. County, L.A. DWP, and Metropolitan is all, we need to conserve water. We need to conserve water. Everybody started conserving water, and then what happened? We need to raise the rates because we're not making enough to pay our bills. So we need to take that thought process into consideration. Yes, I want to go down. I would think if let's go to a medium of the 40-60 and not quite as deep. But we can always address this down the road and go up or down.
No, we can change the rate.
We can go down, but not up in 5 years once we get any rates set.
Oh, okay.
We can't change. That's
right.
Why we couldn't change the fixed rate of a rate.
Right, but we could lower. Well, say that again.
We could not change the fixed versus variable that portion percentage.
We couldn't lower.
No, we'd have to renotice and do a study again.
What we could lower was the amount of the increase per year.
The 3%, we could lower.
But we can't
that.
Go above. Like, if we say this is 3%, we can't go above 3%, but we can always go lower. But over the past couple of years, we have not gone lower. Because, and this was the part that I initially said in the first meeting, is that when we first did the rate study, the goal was to get to a million. And now, the goal is to get to 2 million. So.
Or a million and a half.
Well, no, the goal is still to get to 2 million eventually.
Okay, well,
but a million and a half, I feel a lot more comfortable for you. That's for sure.
Well, then somebody make a motion.
Diana would say, if you like,
yeah. You think?
No,
what,
guys?
Let's
talk. No.
Hold on, girl. Or just say nothing.
I want to see stats on how many people fall into
well, I've missed the motion, being a customer and being on board, so.
No, you want to see a comparison of what?
I want to see what the average person, I know this says average person here, but if we had a total number of this many people are in the 15 range, this many people are in the, like, on an average basis.
You mean consumption?
Consumption, yes.
So you want to know who's in the 0-7 and then the 0-7?
Yeah.
Well, we would have to come back with that information for you.
Okay, I'm going
to
say you're not.
No, you let her talk.
Well, I did already. She's not us.
No, she's the voice.
Peer pressure.
I'm telling you.
No,
it's time pressure. It's just, I'm home to my doggies.
30-70. Yeah, I,
You need a point of privilege?
No.
Okay.
I'm just trying to, you know, decide which one looks better, works better between the 30-70 and the 40-60. On the average summer bill, they're almost identical. Actually, I'm just noticing that now.
Yeah,
Rob, how many cubic feet
do
you think?
61
on average.
Well, like right now, the base rate is like $68, and my last bill I paid $100 in water, but I do have a leak, and I've left it leaked because it's actually kind of a mixed bag. Do I let it leak and they lay in the little puddle, or do I turn the misters on above them? And
same thing.
Yeah. So it's a mixed bag.
So you're right around 25. Mm-hmm. You're right around 25 if your bill is about 150.
Probably right, but I would say right now I'm between 20 and 25. Give plus or minus, it just depends. Horses tend to create water leaks also.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they break pipes.
Step up, so.
Yeah.
Or no, she's a horse person. I've had horses as well, so I know it. They're destructive.
The only time my horses are busting their auto.
I have to take the auto one out.
What'd you do? You put a regulator on the output line down to 20 pounds. Because then what happens is when there is a leak, you don't have 60, 70, 100 pounds pushing water wheel. I did that one. And I actually have all of the animal water set to about 10 PSI. So it pisses my wife off because she's trying to fill the tub for the chickens, you know, the ducks, and it won't fill. Then she forgets it and walks away, and then I have
she gives up what she does. Okay, darling.
Okay. I think 3070, in my opinion. Sorry, I was studying.
We got four 3070s, and so should we vote on the percent?
Why? I'm more worried about the conservation aspect of it, that it could cause a shortfall, is why. Our cost, 70% of all the expenses are fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So as a quote-unquote business owner, I want to, in one way, create a income plus, not a potential minus. If my cost to run a gas station are $100,000 a year, and I'm only charging $30,000 for all the stuff in the store, I'm relying on the consumable, which is gasoline, which I'm only allowed to make 2-3% total profit on that product. I have to sell a lot more gasoline to keep my store viable. And that's a real-world example if you look at having a filling station or a gas station. I mean, that's why the stores are there. It's not because they're being nice. It's because that's their revenue stream and stuff. But their fixed costs are extremely high.
Well, does anybody have a lawn here?
I don't know.
Well, I'm saying of us here right now. Like nobody has
no, but I have trees. I have trees. I have a cactus garden, and I have, I don't know, 10 or 12 trees. And tortoises, and I have automatic water to turn on for the trees and the cactus. And my wife's pleasure and peace of mind and calmness. Happy wife, happy life. So, no, I understand your concern. I'll go with whatever the point is. My biggest concern is the fixed cost differential, and I don't want us to get in trouble.
Because if somebody gets a leak, it's going to be astronomical, right?
Or somebody like me that forgets to turn the water off in the big tent. Did this forget one?
I get you.
No, I've forgotten three times.
We're talking about customers.
Okay, so I'm okay with what the board goes with. I'm not going to get all.
No, I mean, it is exactly opposite of what the actual cost
reality is.
Yeah.
Right. That's why
customers.
That's why we went with the why you guys chose to go with such a high fixed rate last time was because of the cost structure. Right? So
because I couldn't get them to understand that.
So how do we stay it?
If you would have to make a motion on one of the cost structures?
Oh, that's it?
Okay.
I move that, what?
Well, we can move and somebody can second it, and then we can comment on some more.
I move we accept the 3070.
The right information.
3670 variable.
I will second the motion.
Who seconded?
Orange.
Laura. Now, do we have any more discussion? Maxine, do you have anything to comment on that?
No.
Any of the public have any comment on the rate proposal? From what you
No. Said? Did like listening into this. It was fantastic.
We're still talking. So, are you call a vote?
I have a motion on the floor. Call for a vote.
Right. Director Sanderson.
Aye.
Director Morris.
Aye.
Director Orgel.
Aye.
Director Israel.
Aye.
And Director Link.
Aye. Motion passed.
Are you good? Okay.
So we'll
you'll get on getting the notice prepared and all of that. Do you need any assistance with us? Okay, so then while you're here tonight, can we adopt the rate and special meeting because we may not meet the November meeting?
I would want to check with Steve Anderson.
I think the answer is no.
Yeah, I suspect no, but okay. I would want to check that.
So then it might push it to the December meeting, just as an FYI. I don't think you can adopt rates at a special meeting. And if we change the date to accommodate 45 days, it would be a special meeting. But you'll check and get back to us.
I will. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Guys.
Next item is we're going to go into closed session. I want to get that out of the way, too.
Director Lee. I'm going to excuse myself from the closed session.
Okay. And we'll text you when we start over again.
Okay, thank you.
Can I call you back?
No problem. Were you able to listen in at all?
Yes, and I caught some of it, but some of it I couldn't hear.
Okay.
And there was an awful lot of
somebody making noise.
Percentages
yeah.
and rates and
yeah.
ratios that I she lost me. But let me call you back. I'm just going to eat.
I've been... Go eat! I love you. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
I'll copy. Bye. Make the smoke kind of pull up this way, so we'll get some smoke on the chicken, but not too much. So we're going to cook this until the breast pressure is 130 degrees, which is about 45 to 55 minutes. Okay, so it's been about 15 minutes. Let's check this guy out. Starting to look good, and then you can see he's got some smoke on him.
Mm-hmm.
Get a little bit of that nice color there. So I'm going to go in the thickest part of the breast, and I'm looking for 130 degrees. And that looks perfect, 131.
All right,
we'll take it. All right, so now we're going to do some really nice browning. We've got indirect heat to get it really juicy at this point.
It's a little pale.
Low pale, and that's why we've got these hot coals over here. So I'm going to move it over, but before I do that, I need to make sure I get the juices out of the cavity here. If we don't, they'll come down here and crack under the coals and all that stuff on us. We don't want that. So I'm just going to go right into the cavity and gently pick it up, bring a bowl underneath, and just give it a tilt. Awesome. So now I'm just going to put it back side down, breast side up, right on top. You can already see that nice sizzle.
Yeah.
So I'm going to cover the grill, and we're going to cook this for about 5 minutes until the back is nice and cool and brown. Oh, yeah.
Starting to smell it now.
We can do a little peek here. You can see we've got some really gorgeous brown in there. Looks
that
nice,
looks
right?
Good.
Awesome. So now we're going to flip it over and get the same thing on the breast side.
Well, and also I can see that he's handling the tongs very gently, so you're not whipping any of that skin on the breast, because you want that to stay intact.
Exactly. So that beautiful browning, we can on the bottom there as well, that's another 5 minutes. Okay, so that's been 5 minutes. Nice searing going on. So let's take a look at that.
Ooh.
That's good.
That's great.
So we're going to pop it over here over indirect heat again so we can take its temperature. And this time we're looking for 155 degrees. We're actually going to let this rest for 20 minutes and we'll see if it becomes up past 160. Beautiful. So we're at 156.
All right.
We are good to go. So we're transferred to our carving board here. We're going to leave this uncovered so we can keep that nice crispy skin. We can head in about 20 minutes, we can carve.
All right.
And this thing looks and smells incredible. You get with the smoke, right? So this is rested for about 20 minutes, bring that extra 5 degrees from that sear that we did at the end there. So the only thing left to do now is carve. So I'm going to go on the side here first. Oh, my goodness. Those juices are so good. I separate between
Thank you.
busted and tomato chips, which my family chicken grandma thought you didn't get that chocolate in every bite. I actually think that the chocolate is delicious. World fruity, it won't have you ever want any chocolate.
And really crazy too, kind of decadent as well. All right, this is in my second cooking day too. You know what, I still like them all. One of my
favorites. Yeah.
What a great.
This was actually kind of at the bottom of the rankings, and you can put anything at the bottom of the rankings.
Right.
They're all good. Yeah, and we just felt like it had great flavor, it had smaller size, and so it could be the fit throughout your cooking. And the last one,
this is very good tip.
Kind of nailed it with a bit of dark chocolate. I thought I'd fool you. This is our favorite dark chocolate. That's why you like dark chocolate.
Tablespoons of panko, a couple of blues. coating breadcrumbs in a 12-inch nonstick skillet over medium low heat with 1 tablespoon of vegetable oil will not get ready when they turn golden brown. So it's been about 5 or so minutes, and you know they're ready because they're nice golden brown. Sounds like toast to me. I know, right? So I'm going to take it off the heat. I'm going to add 3/4 teaspoon kosher salt. Because sweet salt really doesn't have much flavor on its own. It does not. Needs a little help. We have a 1/4 teaspoon of red pepper flakes and a 1/4 teaspoon of pepper. I'm going to give it a little bit of stir. That looks great. I'm going to put this aside and start working on our beef. All right, it's time to fry these beef.
Yes.
So we have this skillet over high heat. This is the same skillet we use to make our bread crumbs. I've added 2 tablespoons of oil, and you'll know it's ready to start cooking when it starts to smoke. So it's time to go. Add these beans in a single layer.
All right.
And no stirring. It's a really good thing that your dryer has gone through all that water went into that skillet, or if you're frying. So you just make sure that they're all touching the bottom pan in a single layer. So these beans are charred beautifully. They're more tender. I'm just giving you a final turn, another 4 to 5 minutes, so to take it to our olive oil.
All right, so how is it that green beans are a long time over high heat and not turn mushy?
Well, green beans so well contain cellulose and pectin. These two compounds help to give green beans their structure. Now, their structure also comes from a polymer called lignin. Lignin's property is a compound. So the hemicellulose, pectin, and the lignin all contribute to the green beans' firmness, even after a long day in the skillet. All right, they're ready to go. So I'm just going to get these green beans on the platter, but I'm going to leave all of the excess oil in the skillet. Do you know what else is going to add to the platter then? Panko we made earlier. I'm going to sprinkle that on top. These are gorgeous. Unbelievable aroma in here as well. All right. Wow. They're tender.
Oh, yeah.
Deep flavor. Really, really deep, roasted almost flavor. Caramelized on the outside. The interior is still nice and firm. I love that little bit of crunch.
Beautiful.
A little kick. Yeah, the kick is coming. The black pepper and the red pepper 1-2 punch. Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. To get unbelievably deep and rich flavor in the green beans, rinse and then microwave green beans. Create a crunchy topping by cooking and seasoning panko breadcrumbs. Sear those green beans in a single layer until they're charred all over. Transfer them to a serving bowl and then sprinkle with those crumbs. North American Chef Kitchen is your kitchen. Skillet charred green beans with crispy breadcrumb topping. You can get this recipe and all the recipes from this season, along with tasting, testing, and select episodes on our website at AmericanChefKitchen.com.
Let us help you with any dilemma. Visit our website anytime for free access to the newest season recipes, taste tests, and equipment videos. Or to watch current season episodes, log on to AmericanBestKitchen.com/TV. America's Best Kitchen 20th Anniversary TV Show Cookbook includes the best ever recipes from the most successful cooking show on TV. This celebratory 20th anniversary book includes foolproof recipes, expert cooking advice, and recipe commentary from the cast. Plus, every recipe from season 20. The cost is $24.99. That's $15 off the cover price of $40. Be sure to call 1-800-955-0230 or online at AmericasBestKitchen.com/TV. America's Test Kitchen is brought to you by the following.
Nope.
Sponsored by Kohler. We design innovative things and sponsors for people who do their best work in the kitchen.
Chief Jerry, we work with farmers from across the country. Our family is very big. The farms are small. Carry for them to produce organic free range.
Pediatric surgeon. Volunteer. Tilbury Carbon. A Raymond James financial advisor. Tailored advice to help you live your life. What? Well,
relish every moment. Subdue. Woo.
No.
Thank you.
I've been exploring cooking and eating in Mexico for over 4 years. Now I'm taking you to Mexico City for a deep dive into the classic dishes you have to learn. It's time to share my best recipes ever.
Echo. Tell me the question of the day.
Good evening. Here is today's question of the day. The topic is history. It is worth 3 points. Which frontiersman of the early 19th century was known as the king of the wild frontier? Choose from the following. A. Benjamin Bonneville. B. Davy Crockett. C. Daniel Boone. Or D. Paul Bunyan.
Repeat.
Okay, here is the question again. Which frontiersman of the early 19th century was known as the king of the wild frontier? Choose from the following. A. Benjamin Bonneville. B. Davy Crockett. C. Daniel Boone. Or D. Paul Bunyan.
Repeat.
Okay, here is the question again. Which frontiersman of the early 19th century was known as the king of the wild frontier? You can choose from A. Benjamin Bonneville, B. Davy Crockett, C. Daniel Boone, or D. Paul Bunyan.
Repeat.
Okay, here is the question again. Which frontiersman of the early 19th century was known as the king of the wild frontier? Choose from the following. A. Benjamin Bonneville, B. Davy Crockett, C. Daniel Boone, or D. Paul Bunyan.
C.
Close, but not quite. The correct answer was B. Davy Crockett, born in 1786. Davy Crockett was an American folk hero, soldier, and who represented the state of Tennessee in the U.S. House of Representatives. In early 1836, he took part in the Texas Revolution and died at the Battle of the Alamo after being captured by the Mexican army. 65% of our fans answered this correctly. You have earned a total of 2080 points. Your play streak is at 111 days in a row. Stimulate your brain every day with the question of the day.
From top to bottom, that's yes for life.
And on
carjacking suspect in a standoff with police. We'll have the latest. Then a man sets off huge fireworks inside a business. The shocking video tonight at 10. Then a man... An armed carjacking suspect in a standoff with police. We'll have the latest. Then a man sets off huge fireworks inside a business. The shocking video tonight at 10.
Thanks, Mom. This is a perfect first job for
him. First job? I think you're looking at the birth of a career.
I was going to have him put out flyers, but I didn't trust him with a staple gun.
How much you paying?
Obviously too much. Look at him. For the record, I probably spent $20 in a Playboy magazine.
Oh, boy.
A magic marker over the top has been produced.
Oh, that's disturbing on so many levels.
I should have hired a monkey.
You mean a different monkey?
Gets underway this week. It used to be a favorite because it stayed open late.
We should have changed their mind. As a lot of actors are going back to work, they all have to get the corona test, like Ryan Reynolds or Gal Gadot. The new film they're doing together is with The Rock.
Out of everyone you just said, who used Rob would go for the
mic? Well,
the answer is clearly Gal Gadot.
What about The Rock?
Why would you want to lick The Rock's
COVID test?
Why would you want to lick
anybody's COVID test?
He's the one for the most. I heard in my head, which one do you want to lick?
You have to take our eyes on something that is more important.
Alternative facts.
Chris Evans, in his first interview since accidentally releasing explicit photos of himself on the internet.
You're coming beautifully.
No, pretty chap. Oh, yeah. So, cover time.
We're sure the Louvre will be reaching out to him any day now.
You shall be witness to a night of fear, despair, and unspeakable.
part we were talking about.
I'm Donna. I'm Don Lewis's oldest daughter. We need to know what happened to our father.
Carol Baskin's premiere of Dancing with the Stars was a lot different than what people could have predicted because Don Lewis, well, his daughter, popped up. And they ran a whole commercial.
During the show, reminding everyone Don is still technically missing and asking anyone with info to go ahead and call.
Do you know who did this where Carol Baskin was involved?
Anybody there? Can anybody hear me? Hi, anybody there? Hello?
Always proud to be part of the Princess Bride family. Sometimes real-life family comes first.
That had nothing to do with politics, nothing to do with not liking the cast.